I wanted to go a little bit farther in our study we did in Sunday school this past January, because I think I made it in like two slides or something, so I'll try to go a little farther. Here's what we were talking about, just by way of review. We've been talking about conflict and how we as human beings, because we are human, will go through conflict. If you haven't ever gone through conflict, please see me after, because I'd like to figure out how you did that. But if you don't find conflict, typically it will find you. And if you need to know what it's like to go through conflict, Ms. Pepperd and I have a whole variety of options and scenarios. You can come spend a day with us, and we'll throw you right in the middle of a lot of conflict. You know, some of our teachers, you can sit right in their classroom. Plenty of conflict there sometimes. Playground, a lot of conflict there. I'm just being facetious. But we go through things, and we have to deal with situations, and we have to confront things sometimes. And conflict can be good or bad. Here's four causes we talked about really quickly. Poor communication or differences in values. We spent a lot of time on this. Competition for resources. We went through biblical examples. Or sinful attitudes and habits. And the main factor in conflict is this. Sinful pride. You ever dealt with somebody and it's literally just pride on both sides? You know, the Bible's still true. Proverbs 15, verse 1. My mama kept telling me this verse when I was a kid, and I don't know why. Well, maybe I do. She always would say, a soft answer turns away wrath. You know, what does that mean? In order to give a soft answer, you can't have any of this. You can't have any pride. A soft answer involves humility. Even if you know that you're right and the other person's wrong, but you don't want to destroy a relationship over something that's petty or puny, and so you humble yourself sometimes and you take some things and you move on. And many times I find that if somebody's very, very upset, Mr. Brainerd taught me this one, when you ever have to talk to somebody and they're all angry. You know, one thing, if they're super, super angry, sometimes you wait to call them back. Sometimes that makes them more angry, but sometimes that makes them a little, they think through things. I know he's had to deal with people in Yak. We're getting into baseball season, so I'm looking forward to some more good stories of the people that he has to deal with. But sometimes they're just as angry as you can ask for out there on the field, right, Pop? I mean, they're just steam coming out of their head because, you know, that was a ball, not a strike, or vice versa, or whatever call the umpire made. It's the end of the world because someone got struck out or whatever. And they're just, I mean, piping mad, make fools of themselves. And most of the time, when Mr. Brainerd has to call them the next day, sometimes he doesn't have to because they call and say, well, I got home and my wife chewed me out and I realized what a fool I made of myself. And so they call and apologize. That's real nice, isn't it, when that happens? A lot of those wives out there do that for some reason, and they take care of it. A lot of times, sometimes over time, they think about it. But there are times we have to deal with things. We have to confront things. We have to deal with conflict. And when we have a more humble attitude, conflict kind of dissolves a little better. Most people, I say most people, there are a few exceptions. Most people, if you demonstrate humility, they demonstrate humility as well. You ever notice that? Most people. There are some that are so full of themselves and so prideful that if you apologize for something, yeah, you better. You know, I know I'm right and you're wrong all the time, so I'm glad you're over here eating crow. Well, okay. But most people, for the most part, if you tell them, hey, look, you know, I don't like the way this is going. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have acted that way, or I shouldn't have had that attitude. Most normal people go, you know what? I'm sorry too. And I shouldn't have acted that way. And then you shake hands, you move on with life, and go out and eat together or something, right? We love eating. I've told you all the stories about my dad. He used to make my mom so mad that we would get in an argument sometimes when I was older, working on the job with him or something, not when I was a kid. If I argued with him when I was a kid, it'd be all over. I'd wake up in the hospital. You know, it was like, Dad, we should do it this way or no. And, you know, he was the boss, so I had to, you know, relent. But sometimes I didn't have the best attitude. And then I'd go and apologize to him. Dad, I shouldn't have been that way. Well, I'm sorry too, son. I was just stuck in my way and wanting to do it that way. And you're probably right. We should do it that way. And we'd talk to him. All right, let's go eat something. Well, we'd go in the truck and go eat lunch. And my mom was like, how do y'all do that? You know, women, I guess, kind of hold on to things a little longer. I don't know. Maybe I should avoid that subject. But I used to drive my mama nuts. But we forgive, move on, and forget, and go on with life. But humility is what we need in those things. Then we looked at a variety of things about good and bad conflict. I'm not going to go through all this, just review real quick. Conflict can be good. Conflict can be bad. But we want to think of conflict as a Christian. Do we really believe that God brings things into our lives? If we say we believe that, and it is true, then we also should understand that sometimes conflict comes in our life because God's trying to give us an opportunity for something. Something to learn. We've talked about this a lot. We tell young people many times that You get caught with something, it's not the end, it's the beginning. You know, okay, there's a conflict there, but it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity to grow. It's an opportunity to understand more from God's Word. So not all conflict is bad. It can be. The Bible says in James chapter 4 that conflict is bad when we are fighting amongst each other and all these things because of our evil lusts in our heart, our evil desires that we have. And that puts conflict between people because we have this pride in our heart of doing what we want to do. So conflict, of course, can be bad, and that needs to be dealt with biblically. If there's sin that is causing a conflict, then it needs to be dealt with. It needs to be brought out. It needs to be confessed, forgiven, repented of, which means we don't do it anymore. We're on a new path to serve the Lord in a better way and not return to those things. It's an opportunity to learn and to glorify God. You go through a situation, maybe it's a struggle with a brother, maybe it's a conflict with an employee, or maybe it's someone you work with that maybe they're not even a believer. And you're going to go through maybe a hardship with them, or maybe they don't understand your religious beliefs and they're attacking you, or you're going through some type of tough situation. It's an opportunity to glorify God. It's an opportunity to resolve things and point people to Christ in doing so. Now, we left off here last time talking about the way we can respond to conflict. We want to look at three different types, three categories of responses. The first one is an escape response. We discussed that. Where when, okay, there's a conflict, some people, complete and utter denial. Nope, not me. It wasn't me. I didn't do that. I didn't do it. No, it's not true. We've dealt with that before. We had a situation like that today. Just deny until all the evidence points otherwise. You can deny. You can run away, flight, or you can do the sad extent that we even see that in the scripture. Some people, they just want to get out of the conflict and they just commit suicide or something like that. It's terrible to think of that. But those are some extreme responses of, I just want to get out of this. I don't want to face the conflict. I want to avoid it. I'm going to run from it. And we all know this. If you run from a conflict, what's going to happen? It's going to run after you. It's going to follow you. The statement is still true that I guess Dr. Bob said, no doubt the trouble is with you. It's going to follow you. I'll just get away from those people that don't understand me. And then you go to another place with people and they don't understand you either. Then another place, well, they don't understand me either. What's the problem here? Nobody understands me. It's because the problem is with you. If you run from things, it will follow you. It doesn't bring any resolution. It actually makes matters worse. Then we looked at the opposite spectrum is you can escape and run and avoid it. The opposite side of the spectrum is you can have an attack response. We left off with this, the three things here. We were talking about Stephen in the book of Acts and how they assaulted his character, how they brought up false witnesses to lie about him. They weren't happy about what was going on, and they were going to bring Stephen down at all cost. The conflict in that case, by the way, resulted from the fact that Stephen spoke the truth. He preached the truth. So you better be ready as a Christian, especially in the days that we live in, that when you speak the truth, prepare to receive this type of response from people in the world. Just go ahead and write it off. It's going to happen. There's going to be some people that are upset. There's going to be some people that will try to maybe not even physically assault, even though that is the case. You've seen that happening in our country the past year. They get mad and just randomly walk up to somebody and clock them in the street. Attack them, kick them, and all this stuff. And then if you dare defend yourself, then suddenly you're cast as the mean person and you're in prison for the rest of your life. But we see that, the physical assault. We see how they also in Acts chapter 6 brought up false witnesses. They'll lie about you. Well, that's not fair. What do you expect the world to do? That's all they know. They're serving their father, the devil, who is the father of lies. They manipulate. They lie. They make up things. They're going to assault your character. They're not happy that you spoke the truth. Another attack response that people would do is, well, I'm going to sue you. Litigation. We spent some time talking about that. We talked about 1 Corinthians chapter 6. We talked a little bit about, you know, should brethren sue each other and those kind of things. And, of course, I don't believe according to the Bible that we should. Now, if there's a legitimate situation in, like, the world or, you know, you shouldn't. I don't think you should go to the extreme of, well, let's see, we got in this car accident and there was a really bad thing and I'm physically impaired for the rest of my life and I'm going to have to do a lawsuit in order to get compensation because they're not willing to pay for my car, et cetera, et cetera. There's legitimate times where you have to do that. But when it's brother to brother, we discussed that in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, that the church should be involved perhaps or other brethren in helping to litigate that or bring it to a conclusion. So Denial makes things worse. Flight postpones the inevitable. Suicide, of course, takes you out of it. Assault and attack means you would rather win than preserve a relationship. We're seeing a lot of that today, aren't we? If you have a differing opinion from somebody, you have a different view than somebody does, they don't care suddenly about you being friends anymore. They don't care about preserving a friend relationship. They just want to win. They want to take you down. They want to make you look dumb. They want to prove that you're wrong. They don't care about your relationship with them anymore. There's a lot of things like that. So to them, it's a contest of, you know, I get to push my rights on you, and I want to be the victor in those things. We see the final result, of course, of this. It goes to its furthest extent, would be murder. What happened to Stephen in Acts 6 and 7? I mean, first they assaulted him. They were, you know, speaking lies against him, bringing up people against him, and then they eventually ended up killing him. I mean, that is an extreme case, just like suicide is an extreme case, but you can see that it happens. I mean, you think about in church history. Has this not happened to many Christians in church history? Of course it has. We could go back and look at the times, the Romans, and several times in the Dark Ages, and the time of the Inquisition, and all those things, where a lot of terrible things happened to believers because they stood for the truth and were attacked for it. So that's another way that some people deal with conflict, not really biblical. Let's look at a third category. And this is a peacemaking response. Now, again, there are times in life where with certain people, this is not possible. It may not be possible. But as a believer, we should seek to pursue peace. I mean, the Bible talks about that. To pursue peace, especially when it relates to our own brethren. If there's an issue, if there's something that arises or some kind of conflict, we ought to pursue peace, especially, the Bible says with all men, but especially with our brethren, we should. We shouldn't be just, oh, well, it doesn't matter, and move on or avoid it, sweep it under the rug, don't think about it. So what are some peacemaking responses? And I want you to make sure you understand these and don't misunderstand them, but there's several that we're going to look at here. The first one is to overlook something. You say, what are you talking about? I thought we weren't supposed to run from conflict. Well, I'm not talking about running from conflict. I'm talking about certain situations of, you know, finding peace should be our goal, our hope, our response. If possible, the Bible says, blessed are the peacemakers. It should be something that we strive for. But let's look at a couple of verses. Look at Proverbs chapter 19. Proverbs chapter 19, verse number 11. The discretion of a man deferreth his anger, and it is his glory to pass over a transgression. Now, a more literal and other translations say this, good sense makes one slow to anger. Y'all then find that people that are quick to anger are people that don't stop and think through things, and that's, we're all a little guilty of that at least one time or another. Stop and think through things before anger. And the end of this, it is glory to overlook an offense, is more of a literal translation there. To overlook an offense, you put that in conjunction with 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8. I think we all know what that verse says, that love does what? Covers a multitude of sins. Now, we're not talking about sweeping sin under the rug. Sin needs to be dealt with. We're talking about perhaps times where everybody has their own quirks, right? We all have our own failures, our own weaknesses, and sometimes, instead of making a huge deal about it, we look at our brother, perhaps, and say, you know what? They're a little weak in that area, and I'm going to pray for them. I'm going to try to help them, instead of making a huge explosion about things. You know, everybody has things that little irritate people sometimes. I have a problem with my jaw. I've had it since I was a teenager. It was called TMJ. I was diagnosed with it. They gave me braces to try to fix it and move it forward. It didn't really work. It just made my gums deteriorate. It was just a whole debacle, basically. But I still have popping and pain in my jaws really bad. And when I chew things, it gets a little loud. And my wife's not here, so I can say this. It drives her crazy. My wife, you know, she'll be sitting there crocheting sometimes. And I come in, I'm like, all right. And I sit down and I'm going to have a bag of, I like the crunchy Cheez-Its, the extra toasty Cheez-Its. Crunchier the better for me. I love crunchy stuff. And I'm sitting there and all, and she's like, I go a little overboard. I like hold it up in my tooth and just show it. It makes that cool noise and it just tastes better that way. And she looks at me and she's like, all right, I'm out. And she gets all her crocheting stuff, goes somewhere else and crochets until I'm done eating my Cheez-Its. So I don't know if it's because she likes to crochet and has given me an out. She loves crocheting so much. I don't know. But anyway, I can chew a little loud and I feel really bad. Sometimes in a restaurant, I hear my jaw popping and I'm like, I wish I could stop it from doing that. Maybe I need a muzzle around my face, which would fix multiple things like my looks. But, you know, sometimes I'm like, man, I just wish it wouldn't do that. But it's kind of annoying. And my wife loves me, I think. And so she overlooks that, unless I'm eating extra toasty Cheez-Its. She doesn't overlook it. She just leaves. But she doesn't hold it against me or hate me or make a big deal about it. And I know that's a silly example, but we all have things that perhaps we need to demonstrate love to each other over certain things. Instead of, oh, look at that weakness. Look at that weakness in that brother. Man, he's got such a big problem. I'm going to tell everybody about it. Now, wait a minute. Let's go to the prayer room and pray about it first. We all have issues. We all have things that we're working on, perhaps, or that are a little weakness. I'm not talking about sins. I'm not talking about things that need to come out and be confessed and get right with God. It's just things that this is really, overlook is really a form of forgiveness. It's a form of forgiveness. It's a decision. Now listen, here's what it means. It's a decision that I'm going to make to not talk about it or to dwell on it or let it grow into bitterness. Because we can do that, can't we? There's some things that we have to realize, you know what? That person's going to answer to God for that. And even though I wouldn't do it that way, but that's their decision to do that. I'm not talking about sin. Again, don't get me wrong. It's their decision to do this or make this, or, and it might drive me nuts. But you know what? I may have to choose to overlook that so I don't become bitter. I may get so worried about how somebody else is doing something that it makes it hard on me to serve the Lord because I get a root of bitterness in my heart. So it's a decision to overlook. It's a decision to demonstrate love. And many times you can avoid a conflict over minor things. You know, they say don't make mountains out of molehills. We love to do that, don't we? We love to take the small things and make it so huge that, I mean, this is just dire. This is World War III right here if we don't get this resolved. And it could be something so minute that if we just choose to be humble and in a form of forgiveness have a decision to not talk about it or make a big deal about it or dwell on it or grow into bitterness, but to pray about it. There's some things that we should perhaps do that and it would avoid some conflict. It would bring peace to a situation instead of stirring up strife or a non-peaceful situation. Again, don't misunderstand. There are times we have to take a stand. There are times where it's conflict. We dealt with, we mentioned 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 the other night, that the end result of that conflict of withdrawing from a disorderly brother, the end result of that is to try to win that brother so he would see that he was wrong, to confess, to repent, to have forgiveness, and to move on. So the verse says there that he may be ashamed, not counting him as an enemy, but warning him as a brother. There's sometimes where there's little quick things that we should overlook, but we make it out like this is huge. This person's an apostate. You know, sometimes we throw that around a little too easily. Don't be quick to categorize. There may be times where we have to overlook some things. Now let's move on. What about bigger situations? Situations that need to be dealt with. Situations that were problematic. Well, what about reconciling? Reconciling. Let's look at a few passages here. With reconciling. I've got Matthew 5 up there. We'll look at that one first. And I've got a few more that we can look at quickly tonight. Should it not be our heart and desire to keep peace among, especially the brethren? There may be a time where we need to go and confront something and reconcile. Look at chapter 5 of Matthew. You know this, verse 24. I'll start at verse 23. If you bring your gift to the altar and remember that thy brother hath aught against thee, you better leave your gift, go, find your brother, first be reconciled to him. Our relationship with our brethren better be right if we want our relationship with God to be right, is basically what that's saying. What about Proverbs chapter 28, verse number 13? Let's quickly look at a couple passages. Proverbs chapter 28, verse number 13. There's times to reconcile, and sometimes it means, you know, bringing out, confronting sin, perhaps. Look at verse 13 of chapter 28. He that covereth his sins shall not prosper. Now, this is not talking about overlooking, like just, you know, manifesting and saying, brother, you know, I'm just going to pray for you. But this is There's sin going on. Don't cover it, you won't prosper. But whosoever forsaketh or confesses and forsaketh it will have mercy. Find it interesting that it's a twofold thing there. You know, maybe many of you know, like, you know, I never did this when I was a kid. Maybe some of you did. But you ever say, Mom, if you don't spank me, I will never, ever do it again. Anybody said that besides me? I have. I'm just going to tell you, I've said it. You know, and just, I'll never do it again, Mom. And then 2 hours later, or maybe 2 minutes later for me, I don't know, it's pretty rotten. I'm over there at my brother again, you know, kicking him or whatever, throwing his toys around, stealing stuff from him and saying, I want to play with that or whatever I was doing. I don't even remember. It was so many things to choose from. I can't even think that well. But, you know, what was it? Confess? Mom, I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. But did I forsake it? That's the test. That's the word repent, which means we turn from it and we don't do it again. It's not an active habit of our life to live that way. And so are we going to see confession? Don't cover, but confess and forsake. And if we go to each other in a time even of reconciliation, we may have to confess to each other some things. Hey, brother, I did this. I shouldn't have done it. I said this. I shouldn't have said it. And many times, and I've been guilty of this too, we try to kind of manipulate what we did to make it sound better. It's better to just get it out and say, we did it. We're done. Move on. Sorry. We make mistakes. And most people are forgiving people. And I tell you what, as Christians, we better be, if we aren't a forgiving people, then we've forgotten something very important, that our God forgives our old rotten hearts. And suddenly we think we're God somewhere. Well, I'm not going to forgive you. You did that 15 years ago. And I've been thinking about it ever since. Well, you've got a problem. Got a problem. It should be a desire, instead of thinking about it, to go reconcile. Some other verses. Well, we won't go to that one. We're going to go to that later. Let's look at, I think this is the right one, Colossians chapter 3. Just listen to this verse, verse 13. Excellent verse. Colossians chapter 3, you know this verse. Verse 13. Forbearing one another. Boy, that's hard, isn't it? But I was right and they were wrong. Forbear one another. Next verse, and forgiving one another. Forbear and forgive. If any man have a quarrel against you, that's a great word. We don't use that much anymore. It means a complaint against you. You ever had somebody complain against you? If you haven't, be a teacher. There, you know, or maybe your employee, your fellow employees that work with you, your coworkers, maybe they're complaining about you. Or maybe your siblings, they never complain about each other, right? Brothers and sisters, they always get along great. I got along great with my sisters, you know. You can ask my mom and dad. Okay, don't ask them, actually. You know, you get in a quarrel, or you get into an argument, basically, or you're kind of complaining against each other. What should you do? Forbear and forgive. You know, I find it harder and harder for young people to do a simple thing. Admit when you're wrong. Our world, our culture, our society has basically promoted everything for them to be able to get out of situations. You know, we ought to just be running, young people, to the Lord and saying, Lord, I'm wrong. Mom and Dad, I was wrong. Teacher, I was wrong. Instead of going home maybe and saying, you won't believe what the teacher accused me of. Deep down in our old rotten heart, we know we did it anyway. Teacher said, I did this and I never would. Well, 4 people heard you. Yeah, but they were mistaken. I would never do that. And then, oh, you're calling my son a liar. Well, yeah, baby. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, basically. I mean, 4 or 5 people. We want to protect instead of, let's just get it out. Let's forgive. Let's ask. Let's say, Lord, forgive us, because Christ will forgive you, and so also do ye. Again, when someone comes to us to reconcile, we better have a mind of forgiveness, because if we don't, there won't be peace. There won't be peace. There'll be more conflict. Mind of forgiveness. A couple other things, and we'll look at a verse here in a minute. What about negotiating? Now, I'm not meaning in a compromising kind of way, but being able to talk through something and understand what happened. Now, Philippians chapter 2 simply says this. We've looked at this verse. Look not every man on his own things. It's not all about me, what I can get out of this conflict, why I'm always right, but look on the things of others. You may have to negotiate through a conflict. Maybe it's something very practical, and maybe you're having a hard time coming to an understanding of something. Maybe it's a Christian business and Christian workers, and there's contracts or other things involved, and you may have to negotiate some things. Maybe you have to have a little give and take. If you always stand on, I'm this, and it's never changing, maybe you'll tell your wife, it's going to be this way for the next 50 years, and I'm not negotiating nothing with you. Well, you're probably not going to have a very fun marriage or enjoyable marriage. Some people make their wives sign contracts and stuff. But, a pastor said, the guy that got married and then went straight off and went fishing, right, and said, this is the way it's going to be. I'm going to do it. Well, okay. There's a little give and take there, isn't there? There should be. Some negotiating, not in a weird way, but you want to please both sides at times. I'm not talking about compromising for sin and things. But there's times where you have to listen to both sides and say, look, let's come to an agreement here. Let's have some wisdom here. There's times for that. Now, these first three things are what we would call personal peacemaking. That you personally can come to a peaceful resolution by doing certain things. But there's three others that we would call assisted peacemaking. Just quickly go through these. You may have to have a time or a situation of mediation. Let's go to Matthew chapter 18. I know you probably know that we're heading there eventually. Matthew chapter 18. You can see the personal here, and then you can see the assisted. Matthew chapter 18. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, did something against you or some issue happen, maybe it was a misunderstanding, which is why you should go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. That is an honorable and respectful thing to do. I don't know, but I've been wrong before. I know that's shocking to y'all. Or I've misspoke before. Or I've been misunderstood before. Have you ever been misunderstood? Sure, everybody has. And I've had people that misunderstood it, and you know what they did? They came to me first in private. You know what? You appreciate that, don't you? You say, man, I didn't realize I said it that way. I'm sorry. I should have said this. I don't know what I was thinking. And it's over. And it's done. That's go to the brother, fault between him and thee alone. If he shall hear thee, what have you done? You've gained your brother. You've got peace. That's the whole point, isn't it? Do we really want to be at each other's throats as brethren? No. But to have peace in the brother relationship. Now, here we go. Now we get into assisted peacemaking, verse 16. If he will not hear you, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. That, hey, I want you all to hear what happened and both sides of what's going on. If he would neglect to hear thee, tell it to the church. If he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. That's pretty hard, isn't it? Pretty hard. But I'll tell you what it indicates. Someone that's so full of pride, they'll never admit when they're wrong, and they will never give an inch. You're going to have a life full of conflict if that's your heart. A life full of conflict. You may have to have going and help it. Arbitration, that's mentioned in the Bible. That's when there's maybe a dispute, maybe it's even a legal dispute. And Paul says if it's between the brethren, they should find some people in the church to help them. Get someone else to look at it and come to a conclusion and help you. Get an extra opinion from some of your brethren. Even accountability, verse 17. Jesus commands the church leaders to intervene, to hold him or her accountable. Here's this guy that's refusing to listen, refusing to even discuss it. Well, then he needs to be held accountable. Don't just ignore it. He needs to be held accountable, and because there may be some serious underlying issues there. Here is, when the church gets involved, and it's an interesting thing. I know there's a lot of opinions about church discipline and all those things. But when God's people have to get involved, or the pastor has to get involved, or the church leadership has to get involved, it should be lovingly, redemptively, and restoratively. I don't know if those are all actually words. But that's the goal. We want it to be redeemed. We want it to be resolved. We want there to be an agreement and a conclusion and an understanding and an improvement. And restoration, that should be the goal of this as well. Here is really, this is a kind of an icon or whatever you want to call it, a picture. Here's the escape responses on the left side. Here's the attack responses over here. Those are the extremes. You can run. You can attack. Here you're not worried about preserving a relationship. Here you're so worried about the preserving the relationship, you just avoid it. But we should find ourselves somewhere in the middle. We want to bring peacemaking responses. If it's mediating to our brother, going to our brother and saying, hey, look, let's discuss this. I think there was a misunderstanding. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's talk about it. Let's come to a conclusion. And then here is, again, by the way, this is private to public, right? Less people involved, and the farther you go, the more people that are involved or will. Voluntary to forced. Different ways that it moves there. But both extremes, fight and flight, are pictured here. What do they do, though? They avoid the underlying issue of sin. We need to be in that section that let's go to the God's way of doing things. Really quickly, escape, attack, and peacemake. The focus on escaping is me. The focus on attacking is you. The focus on peacemaking is God and our heart spiritually. Focus is on God's glory and restoring this spiritually. The goal is to peace fake. I like these. Escaping, you're running from it. You're pretending that there's peace when there really isn't. You're faking it. Attack is trying to break peace. I mean, was there much peace left for Stephen after they killed him? Well, he's dead. Sad. Again, peace make. Fake, break, or make. And then the result over here is to destroy your relationship or reconcile the relationship. You know, I think that if God desires to reconcile this lost sinful race to himself, that we should seek to be reconciled when there's an issue as well. God is not overlooked, but he's judged sin and he deeply, deeply, deeply desires to be reconciled to his creation. He gave us an avenue for it, right through Jesus Christ. And we should seek that same for each other as well. My time is almost gone. I did not mean to talk this long. Here's a quick little story from the author of this book that I've studied. He says he was asked to help seven adult brothers and sisters. Now imagine that. Seven adult brothers and sisters settle a dispute over whether they should keep their elderly mother in her home or put her in a retirement center. Some of you may be facing that debate one day. I don't know. I'm just kidding. All right. Five of the siblings were doing all they could to escape from the situation. They pretended the conflict didn't exist. They refused to meet with the others to talk about it. The other two siblings attacked each other intensely and frequently slandered each other to family and friends, fighting in court to try to obtain legal guardianship. So five siblings were fleeing. Two siblings were attacking. So he was called in to help. And the first step in resolving the dispute was to help the family change the way they'd been responding. The five siblings that had been trying to escape finally saw the benefit of meeting together and they agreed to meet. The other two sisters grudgingly consented, but they continued to attack each other during the entire meeting, accusing each other of bad motives, demanding opposing solutions. He finally said, you know what? He took those two sisters. He met with them in private. He said, I asked them to take a look at how they were treating each other. They looked at Bible verses and all those things. He said, the Lord began to work in their heart. The real cause of the conflict came to the surface almost 20 years earlier. 20 years old. One sister had said something that hurt the other, didn't even realize it. The offended sister brooded over the insult, and their relationship was poisoned for 20 years. Consequently, they opposed each other in literally everything, even if it was their mother's own care. He said, we talked and prayed. They began to deal with their feelings and actions in light of the gospel. God softened their hearts, moved them. They confessed their sins, forgave each other, embraced each other for the first time in 20 years. They soon joined their brothers and sisters, explained what had happened. And within 5 minutes, all seven children agreed their mom would be happier in her own home. In another 15 minutes, they negotiated a schedule for her care, and it was all done. So a 20-year grudge. It was resolved when they finally were forced to confront it. And that's what the Lord wants us to do with conflicts or things that arise in our heart. And confront it. Now, there's times you overlook. If it's a weak, it's just a small little thing. But there are times that we have to reconcile. We have to maybe be humble. We have to be humble. And it's very hard for us to do. I'm speaking for myself. Very hard for us to do. And I pray the Lord will help us with this. We'll continue on at another opportunity that we have, and we'll discuss some more about this.